Question 40. Why do referees sometimes wait until the ball has gone out of play before they caution a player? Answer 40. Law 5 empowers the referees to let play continue by allowing advantage to the offended team if the incident committed against them was not serious enough to warrant a red card or players are not seriously injured. If the anticipated advantage does not materialize, the referee can stop play to penalize the original offense with the award of a free kick and administer a caution if necessary. The referee is not obliged to caution a player immediately after an offense has been committed, but if he allows advantage, the referee must caution the perpetrator when the ball next goes out of play. The referee must also be careful not to allow play to restart once the ball has gone out of play and before he has had a chance to caution the guilty player. In incidents where a serious misconduct and a sending off are warranted, the referee must be very certain that if he allows an advantage, that no further serious misconduct will occur. B. There are no players seriously injured. C. The player committing the offense does not take further part in the game action. And D. Most importantly, the advantage should only be given if a clear goal-scoring chance is immediately and obviously available. As a rule of thumb, referees are not advised to allow advantage following a misconduct offense warranting a sending off. The referee is better off stopping play immediately to deal with the misconduct. Allowing advantage to continue may result in the player who committed the sending of offense participating again in play, and this cannot be allowed to happen. In the early days of football, cautions were originally intended to be a severe warning to players of a potential sending off. Even though the laws of the game specifically state that a yellow card should be issued for particular misconduct, experienced referee will firstly try to warn players by talking to them. This can prevent further misdemeanors happening. Other referees do not bother with the talking bit and will issue a caution much more quickly. Question 41. What is the difference between serious foul play and violent conduct? Answer 41. New referees should not worry too much about identifying which is which in their reports. The report will not get rescinded just because the incorrect term was used. The important thing is to note down and report exactly what happened and deal with the perpetrators by sending them off. New referees who are unsure of whether an incident was violent conduct or serious foul play can contact tomorrow's senior referee colleague for assistance. Serious foul play is when a player on the field of play commits one of the offenses punishable with a direct free kick or penalty kick. Carried out whilst the ball is in play, using disproportionate and unnecessary force when making a challenge for the ball against an opponent. This can include instances when there is a good chance, little chance, or no chance at all of the perpetrator actually making contact with the ball. Serious foul play cannot be committed against a teammate, the manager, the coach, the referee, the assistant referee, a spectator, a substitute, or any other person who is not a player. If a serious act is committed against an opponent whilst the ball is out of play or not in a game play situation, this must be penalized as violent conduct. For example, if following a challenge for the ball which has now traveled some 20 yards away from the challengers, one of the challengers decides to elbow his opponent in the face dash. This is violent conduct and not serious foul play. Because the misconduct did not take place in a game play situation, but happened after the original play for the ball. The restart following a serious foul play offense is either a direct free kick or a penalty kick to the team who have been offended against. Violent conduct can occur at any time dash. Either on or off the field of play, and when the ball is out of play, or when the ball is in play. Violent conduct is when a player or substitute is guilty of violent aggression towards an opponent when they are not contesting for the ball. Violent conduct can be committed against an opponent, a teammate, the manager, the coach, the referee, the assistant referee, a spectator, a substitute, a dog, or any other person. Violent conduct usually involves one or more of the following: fighting, striking, kicking, elbowing, throwing an object, or headbutting. The restarts for violent conduct are as follows. Direct free kick or penalty kick if the incident occurred in the perpetrator's own penalty area. To be awarded if the ball was in play when violent conduct was committed on the field of play and involved opposing players. Direct free kick to be taken at the place where the incident occurred. indirect free kick to be awarded if the violent conduct offense is committed on the field of play against non-opponents, e.g. referees, officials, coaches, spectators, or teammates. Indirect free kick to be taken at the place where the offense was committed on the field of play. Dropped ball to be awarded if the violent conduct offense is committed off the field of play and whilst the ball was still in play. Dropped ball to be taken at the place where the ball was when the referee stopped play. Ball out of play when the violent conduct offense occurred. The game should be restarted at the normal stage where it was interrupted prior to the offense, e.g. a goal kick, corner kick, throw-in, free kick, place kick, etc. Question 42. Just exactly what is an obvious goal-scoring opportunity? Answer 42. See the goal-scoring opportunity page on this website for specific details. Question 43. If an attacker shoots towards goal, but the ball skews off his boot and travels outside the defending team's penalty area, is the defending goalkeeper allowed to come outside of his penalty area, dribble the ball back inside his penalty area, and then pick it up? Answer 43. Yes. In this instance, an opponent last played the ball towards the goalkeeper. It does not matter that the ball was outside of the penalty area before the goalkeeper picked it up. The goalkeeper has not committed any infringements and should be allowed to continue with play. The goalkeeper is entitled to pick up any ball within his own penalty area, so long as it was not kicked or thrown directly to him by a colleague. Question 44. Why is there so much inconsistency between referees when judging what to penalize a player for a pushing offense? Answer 44. Let us not forget that football is a contact sport where pushing of one type or another, with the hand, or the body, etc., is an integral part of the play. There have been many law changes over the years, which have endeavored to protect the players and enhance the play action. If pushing is totally removed from the game, and then it will never be the same. Pushing is not normally seen as a danger to players, unless it is done violently or in a dangerous situation. If the referee believes that a push has been done carelessly, recklessly, or done with excessive force, or done to unbalance a player, or to prevent him from fairly challenging for the ball, then it is a foul in accordance with Law 12. For example, when a player pushes an opponent to the ground, or whilst they are both jumping or challenging for the ball. Players very often push by using a bit of their arm, shoulder, or their elbow when they are fending one another off, or when they are trying to maintain balance, or contesting side to side for possession of the ball. Referees will rightly ignore this accepted, part and parcel, aspect of the game, as long as the two players involved are both evenly having a go at one another. Referees will usually let it go on, unless the action is done to such a degree that a foul is eventually committed by one of the players. The strength of pushing can range from barely making an indent on an opponent's shirt to shoving someone 10 yards into the cheap seats. The degrees of pushing allowed also varies immensely from match to match, and can depend on the age of the players, the standard of football, the nationality of the teams involved, the experience of players, the players' perception of what should and should not be allowed, the tolerance of the referee, whether there is a full moon, etc. It is therefore no wonder that each referee measures pushing in a different way. After all, referees are not robots. The best advice to referees is to learn by experience and watching football, and to develop a consistent standard you based on the knowledge gleaned. But remember, pushing done carelessly, recklessly, or with excessive force, or done to unbalance a player, or prevent him from fairly challenging for the ball, must be penalized as a foul. Question 45. Studs up. What does this actually mean, and when should it be penalized? Answer 45. It's not really difficult to identify studs up tackle. They are the type of tackles that make a referee wince. Players intentionally raising their feet above the level of the ball when tackling can cause an old, career-ending damage to an opponent's lower leg. One type of tackle that we are describing here is the well-known over-the-top tackle. This is where the perpetrator has little or no intention of playing the ball and stamps down over the top of the ball without really making contact with the ball. This sort of tackle is the most hated by players, as it can do untold injury if the studs connect with a player's leg or ankle. Players will get very irate when a tackle of this nature is committed against themselves or one of their teammates. The referee must act very quickly to defuse any further trouble following over-the-top tackles. The punishment for such a tackle is at the very minimum a yellow card, and very often a red card. The restart is a direct free kick or penalty to the opposing team. Over-the-top tackles are not dangerous play. In direct free kick restarts, they are the more serious kicks or attempts to kick fouls, direct free kick or penalty kick restarts. An over-the-top tackle is a Law 12 direct free kick offense, kicks or attempts to kick an opponent. It does not matter whether the studs catch the opponent or not. The attempt is enough to warrant a direct free kick or a penalty. Tackles of this nature have no regard for the spirit of the game, and are usually committed in a peak of temper, without any regard for the damage it may cause to an opponent. The referee who does not penalize the perpetrator with at least a yellow card will certainly regret not doing so. Because players who feel that they have not been protected by the referee against such spiteful tackles will no doubt take the law into their own hands and seek retribution against the perpetrator and his team at the very next available instance. Question 46. Why do referees ignore the blatant impeding obstruction offense when an attacker kicks the ball towards his opponent's goal line and then attempts to regain possession of the ball? In the meantime, a defender intersperses himself between the attacker and the ball, with his back blocking the attacker from the ball, knowing full well that if the ball is not touched, it will run out of play naturally for a goal kick. The defender is only focused on blocking the attacker from the ball and has no intention of playing the ball himself, which is invariably never within his playing distance. Answer 46. By law, blocking or screening a player from a route to the ball should only be allowed if the blocking player has the ball within playing distance of him. The 1996/1997 Law 12 stated that an indirect free kick should be awarded against a player committing the following offense: when not playing the ball, impeding the progress of an opponent, i.e. running between the opponent and the ball, or interposing the body so as to form an obstacle to an opponent. The 1996/1997 Law 12 Decision Number 5 further explained that a player was allowed to shield the ball without touching it, so long as it is within playing distance of that shielding player. The FIFA rewrite of the laws in 1997/1998 simplified the wording of the laws, which now only show impedes the progress of an opponent. This exactly describes the question incident above, so why is it still never penalized? Still a good question, and I can never understand why this is not always penalized either. Albeit that I am just as guilty of not automatically penalizing this offense myself. By law, referees should always penalize this offense, but actual enforcement of it varies considerably from referee to referee. The real answer to the question is that over the years, players have become very adept at disguising the fact that the ball is not within playing distance during these types of incidents. This has slowly led to too many instances of this being ignored by referees, and it has now become an unwritten demi-law that is a semi-illegal, semi-accepted part of the game. I believe that referees should be given a mandate from FIFA to apply the laws rigidly and penalize this action by always awarding an indirect free kick. In the past, FIFA have mandated many stipulations for laws that have slipped into disrepute, and this is another one that requires tightening up. An individual referee rigidly applying the law cannot hope to influence the rest of the world. By law, referees should always penalize this offense, but not if, in the opinion of the referee, the defender remains within playing distance of the ball and was therefore legally shielding a playable ball. Impedance, obstruction, only occurs when the ball is too far away to be played by the shielding player. Question 47. If a player deliberately handles the ball after entering the field of play without the referee's permission, what action should the referee take? Answer 47. The referee should caution the player for entering the field of play without receiving his permission. Play should be restarted with a direct free kick for the more serious offense of deliberate handball. If the deliberate handball occurred in the player's own penalty area, then a penalty should be awarded to the opposing team. If the referee has cautioned this player for entering the field of play without his permission, the referee can also, at his discretion, give this player a second caution, leading to a sending off for deliberately handling the ball. Question 48. If a goalkeeper holding the ball within his penalty area puts the ball down on the ground, dribbles it outside of the penalty area, and then back into the penalty area, and then picks it up again. What action should the referee take? Answer 48. The referee should award an indirect free kick to the opposing team, to be taken from the place where the goalkeeper touched the ball a second time inside his penalty area. By placing the ball down on the ground, the goalkeeper has released it from his possession, and he is not allowed to touch it again with his hands until it has touched another player. He is also not allowed to touch the ball if it has received directly from a deliberate back pass or throw-in from a teammate. If he does so, then an indirect free kick is awarded to the opposition. Question 49. Whilst the ball is still in play, is it a penalty if the goalkeeper strikes an opponent in the area, under the goal net, and behind the goal line? Answer 49. The area under the nets is not part of the penalty area, or the field of play. The referee should send off the goalkeeper and restart play with the dropped ball at the place where the ball was when play was stopped. If the ball was inside the goal area when play was stopped, then the dropped ball should be taken from that part of the goal area line which runs parallel to the goal line. At the point nearest to where the ball was inside the goal area when play was stopped. Question 50. Is the goalkeeper allowed to bounce the ball once he has gained possession of it in his hands? Answer 50. Yes, this is acceptable within the spirit of the game, and the goalkeeper is not regarded as having released the ball from his possession when bouncing it on the ground. It is now generally considered that possession of the ball by a goalkeeper in his penalty area includes the act of bouncing the ball in preparation for kicking it out, tossing the ball in the air and re-catching it. The motion of throwing the ball back out into play or out of play, and releasing the ball in a drop kick action whilst punting the ball upfield. In all these motions, the goalkeeper is said to be still in possession of the ball. It only becomes an infringement if he loses possession by dropping it purposefully or accidentally to the ground and subsequently picks the ball up a second time. The punishment for doing this is an indirect free kick to the attacking team at the position where the goalkeeper touched the ball a second time. If in the goal area, then the indirect free kick is taken on the goal area line parallel to where the infringement occurred. Referees should therefore avoid taking any action when goalkeepers bounces the ball in their possession while inside their penalty area. This is not seen as being an infringement of the rules. Whilst bouncing the ball, the attacking players should not attempt to kick or gain possession of the ball, as this is deemed to be interfering with the goalkeeper whilst he is fairly trying to release the ball back into play. The punishment for preventing the goalkeeper releasing the ball is an indirect free kick to the goalkeeper's team at the position where the infringement occurred. If occurring in the goalkeeper's goal area, the indirect free kick can be taken from anywhere within that goal area. Parrying the ball can be seen as gaining possession of the ball. It all depends on whether the referee thinks that the goalkeeper has gained possession or not. For example, a ball blasted at 100 miles an hour can only be parried by a goalkeeper. Conversely, a ball traveling at say 20 miles an hour can be easily caught. So if the goalkeeper decides to parry the ball instead and then pick it up after it has touched the ground, the referee could deem this to be an infringement, so it's up to the referee to decide. Question 51. What action should the referee take if whilst the ball is still in play at the other end of the field, a player in his own penalty area deliberately kicks an opponent? Answer 51. The referee should stop play, send off the perpetrator, and award a penalty to the team of the player who had been kicked. Note, the ball does not necessarily have to be in the penalty area for a penalty kick to be awarded. It just needs to be still in play on any part of the field of play. Question 52. If a goalkeeper lying on the ground outside of his penalty area stretches his arm inside the penalty area and handles the ball, what action should the referee take? Answer 52. None. Play should be allowed to continue because the goalkeeper had not infringed any of the laws. The goalkeeper can only be penalized for handling the ball if it is outside of the penalty area, and in this instance the ball was inside the penalty area. It does not matter whether the goalkeeper is inside or outside of his penalty area, so long as the ball is inside the penalty area. Of course, the answer to this question assumes that the ball was not kicked back deliberately by a teammate or received directly from a throw-in taken by a teammate. If this was the case, then an indirect free kick should be awarded to the opposition to be taken from the place where the goalkeeper handled the ball inside the penalty area. Question 53. When a player commits an offense leading to a penalty kick being awarded, does the award of a penalty against the player cancel out the need for a caution to be given to the offending player? Answer 53. Certainly not. The referee should consider each case on its merits. If the foul was innocuous, the referee may decide not to caution the player, or maybe just have a quiet word with him. Fouls of a greater degree will need to be punished, as they would normally be, when occurring on any part of the field of play. Just because the foul occurred inside the penalty area and lead to a penalty, this should not affect whether the referee should caution a player or not. It is the nature of the offense, and not necessarily the position or punishment of the offense, that merits a caution. Question 54. Whilst a player was receiving treatment off the field of play, he strikes a spectator who has been giving him some verbal abuse during the game. What action should the referee take? Answer 54. The referee should send off the player for committing violent conduct. Substitutes can also be sent off if they commit the same or a similar offense. If the ball was in play when the offense occurred, the restart is a dropped ball to be taken from the place where the ball was when the referee stopped play. Question 55. Two players are standing one in front of another, and as the ball approaches them, the player standing at the rear shouts, "Leave it," and subsequently gains possession of the ball. What action should the referee take? Answer 55. No action at all, because the player shouting, "Leave it," has not gained an unfair advantage and should therefore not be penalized. Players giving and shouting instructions are all part of the game itself. It has always been this way. Imagine a game of football where players were not allowed to speak. Now that would be a novelty for the referee, but it would certainly not allow the game to flow its normal exciting course. There has never been mention in the laws of prohibiting players from shouting out orders and advice to colleagues. I just wish the players knew this. Then us referees would not have to put up with the usual quip. What about the name ref? When opponents shout "my ball" or "leave it." The only time that the referee should penalize a player for calling is when the call is purposefully done to cheat an opponent. For example, imagine an attacker positioned behind a defender, and that defender does not know the attacker is there. The ball is kicked by another attacker towards the defender, who is just about to take control of the ball. The attacker standing behind the defender says, "Leave it." Goalkeeper's ball. The defender, thinking that it is his goalkeeper giving the order, lets the ball roll past him to the attacker, who gains possession and scores a goal. This is clearly unsporting, and if done within the referee's hearing, should be punished with the goal being disallowed and an indirect free kick being awarded to the defender's team, and a possible caution for the attacker. Shouts of "my ball" and "leave it" and "pass it here" and "pass it right" are all part and parcel of the game and should not be penalized. Luckily, calls aimed at cheating opponents are few and far between, and as a rule of thumb, referees should ignore most calls and just tell players to get on with it. Question 56. If after a free kick has been taken, a player complains to the referee about the decision to award the free kick. If the referee decides to caution this player for dissent, when should he administer the caution? Answer 56. The referee has two options. A. Stop play immediately to issue the caution. The restart is an indirect free kick to the opposing team to be taken from the place where the dissent occurred. B. Allow play to continue and caution the player when the ball next goes out of play. The latter, B, is probably the best option, but there will be occasions when the referee will decide to take option A. Either option can be used. Question 57. Is the referee allowed to stop play to have a strong word with a dissenting player, but not give him a yellow card? Answer 57. Legally no, and certainly not in senior games. Nevertheless, I have seen this done to very good effect on many occasions, and have used it myself many times, to curb growing dissent. Play should be restarted with an indirect free kick to the opposing team taken from the place where the offense, dissent, occurred. By law, if the referee stops the game because of dissent, the dissenting player should be cautioned and play restarted with an indirect free kick to the opposing team taken from the place where the offense, dissent, occurred. Question 58. Where should the referee restart play after he stops play to issue a yellow card to a player entering the field of play without his permission? Answer 58. Play should be restarted with an indirect free kick to the opposing team to be taken from the place that the ball was when play was stopped. Question 59. If a defending player taking an indirect free kick just outside of his own penalty area kicks the ball back towards his goalkeeper, but his goalkeeper misses the ball with his foot, but makes contact on the ball with his hands before it crosses his own goal line and into the net, what should the referee do? Is it an indirect free kick against the goalkeeper for touching the ball after receiving a back pass, or should a goal be awarded, or is it a corner, or a goal kick? Answer 59. A goal cannot be scored direct into a player's own goal from a direct or indirect free kick. In this case, the free kick originated from outside of the penalty area. The ball comes into play as soon as it is touched and moves. The goalkeeper subsequently touched the ball with his hand before it entered the goal. The referee should apply the advantage clause and award the goal. Had the ball entered the goal after being touched by the goalkeeper's foot, and then the goal would still count. Had the ball entered the goal without being touched by the goalkeeper, then a corner to the opposing team would have been the correct restart. This applies to both an indirect and a direct free kick. If the goalkeeper had picked up the ball, then the referee should award an indirect free kick for a back pass to the opposing team from the place where the ball was picked up by the goalkeeper. Had the goalkeeper just kicked the ball upfield and away from danger, play should be allowed to continue because no infringement had occurred.